for what I've been calling a flag-centered event. And I thought, man, if we could get that same crowd together for a Christ-centered event, you know, that would be cool. And we live in a predominantly Catholic town, which is fine, but I figured, you know, if we're really going to reach this community, I probably need Father Jim's help. And I went to go see him, and I had this play, this little skit on my heart. It's kind of a humorous, but like says in the bulletin, a meaningful skit, but I wasn't sure how he'd react. He says, oh, bring it over, we'll look at it. I read through the script, and I was like, listen, if you're not comfortable with it, I understand, you know. I didn't know if he'd think it was a little sacrilegious or something because of the humor. And we started reading through it, and he started laughing. He said, this thing is great. And he said, you know, I says, well, you know, if you want to ask somebody in your church to do it, that's fine. You know, he goes, no, I think we should do it. People like it when we do things together. And I said, well, the bottom line is about Christ. And we want to just try and reach this town for Christ. And he said, that's absolutely right. You know what? If some end up at his church, that's great. If we get a couple extra, obviously, I'm not going to be upset about that. But we're looking to reach the town for Christ. So I want you to pray about that. And I want you to continue to pray for your blocks. Again, that wasn't the end of it. That was the beginning. And we're going to be giving you cards again for your block to put in each door to invite this town to come out to this little beach service that we're going to do. And we're looking to have the same group that was here, as large of a group that was here in the parking lot at this beach service on Sunday, July 31st. So be praying about that and be watching for further instructions and cards that will be coming out. All right, we've been talking about the soul for, this will be our fourth time around now. And just looking at the soul, what is the soul and how do we take care of our soul? Last week we talked about how the soul is just so needy. It just needs all the time. And we as human beings, we're limited in almost everything we have, right? We're limited in our intelligence. We're limited in our strength. We're limited in our energy. And we're limited in our morality and all these things. But there's one area that we're not limited in. And that is that we have an unlimited desire. We have desire. We want more time. We want more fun. We want more wisdom. We want more beauty. We want more, and on and on and on and on. And the soul is needy, and as a result, it has to find something that it feels like it gets its fulfillment from, and it's going to end up worshiping that thing. But it's really put in the soul. The nature of the soul is that it needs to have something that it orbits around, that is its center, that keeps it on base. And we have this vulnerability to begin orbiting around other things rather than God. And it gets us off base. But God, of course, is the only thing that really is going to satisfy the soul that it's designed to orbit around. And there's a lot of things that look to get us out of that place. Jesus warned us about that. He said that there's a spiritual realm that's looking to do that. In John 10:10, he says, listen, there's a thief, and his only intent is to steal, kill, and destroy. Paul gave us more details on that in the book of Ephesians when he said, listen, there's principalities and powers, there's spiritual wickedness in high places, there's rulers of the darkness, and we've got to watch out for these things. This Psalms that we've been kind of looking at in our men's group are constantly, you always see how David and the different psalmists are always talking about the enemy and how the enemy is trying to attack them and so forth. And sometimes you might kind of look at that, well, you know, he was a king and he's kind of looking at it as a physical perspective that he's dealing with militaristic enemies. But boy, I tell you, those psalms can be so easily transformed into prayers for us because we're in just as real of a warfare with an enemy that wants to take us down. I was praying earlier this week out of Psalm 7, and it says this, O Lord my God, in you I have taken refuge. Save me from all those who pursue me, and deliver me, or he will, and it says, tear my soul like a lion, dragging me away
while there is none to deliver me, while there is none to deliver me, tear my soul like a lion. A soul without a center is easily torn, or it's just thrown. I remember, this is scary, but I was thinking about it, and it was actually almost 40 years ago. So it's kind of scary where you can almost remember stuff that's a half a century ago. But that's what happens. But when I was like 8 years old, my dad was a school administrator, and so he would have a good chunk of the summer off. We actually took the entire month of July to go see the West. We went to Yellowstone Park, and you know, we saw a Mount Rushmore and Pikes Peak and the Grand Tetons and the Grand Canyon and all of that stuff. And while we were in Wyoming, we decided that we wanted to go to a rodeo. You know, I guess that's what you should do when you go out there. We didn't have those kind of things where we lived. So we went to one, and I'll never forget, and you've probably seen these before, when these guys ride the bucking bull. I mean, that is crazy, especially when they get thrown off. You wonder how they don't get stampeded by the thing. But these guys would ride this thing, and I remember now there was a guy that was telling me recently that he rode one, and now they have these that are in mechanical form. And they have levels, you know, like levels 1 through 12. And somebody challenged him to ride on it. He decided he would. And what the guy told him is the key to staying on the bull is that you can't hang on too tight and rigidly. You've got to be flexible. You've got to be able to keep your center of gravity centered over the bull. And so in order to do that, you've got to be willing to kind of go with it rather than grabbing on too tight, however it throws you. So he says, yeah, man, I can do this thing. So the guy turns on the bull, and of course it starts off slow, and he's like handling it, and then it gets rougher and rougher until it's really going crazy, and he started to hang on tight, and then he remembered what the guy said. So he's letting go, and he's kind of being loose, and that way he can kind of go with the flow, and he's bouncing, his arms are flailing, and then at one point he was riding sideways, but he was still on it, and then it actually started. You get to the point where you feel like it's maxed out, and it's coming back down now. And it finally stopped, and he looked over at the guy that was operating it, waiting to like shock the dude, because this guy figured there was no way I was going to last it. And he looked over at the guy, and the guy smiled, and he goes, that was level 1. So then they put it on level 2. He said he lasted about 2 seconds, you know. And that's really what it is, but that's how life is, isn't it? Life sometimes goes on level 1 for a while, and it can last there for a little bit, and maybe it's sort of like the 1960s old sitcom, a Mayberry, right? And everything's just kind of floating around. A level 1 is sort of like maybe your first week after your honeymoon, where your biggest problem is what you're going to do with the extra 2 blenders you got as a wedding gift, you know? And life never stays on level 1, though, does it? It kind of shifts up, man, and it gets more complicated, and stuff happens, and Opie turns out that he's got some serious anxiety disorders, and, you know, addiction that's been hibernating for decades all of a sudden starts to wake up, and your job is threatened, or you can't sleep, your faith just feels like it's riddled with doubts, and your friend betrays you, you can't sleep. Your health becomes uncertain, and if your soul lacks a center, man, life is just going too fast, and you're going to get being thrown off of that bowl. Your soul is going to get torn, and it's going to be tough, and your only hope is what another psalm says in 63:8. It says, my soul, here's what he said, my soul clings to you, God. Your right hand upholds me. That's what it's going to have to be. That's how the soul thrives. You know, so many things else in life thrive through accomplishments. The soul never thrives through accomplishments. It only thrives by clinging to God and hanging on to Him. I mean, there are forces. We live in a fallen world, and that's why we can't just stay in level 1.
fallen world thrusts you into those other levels, man, where life just starts throwing you around all over the place. And it's the Bible makes us to understand that there were forces of darkness that were unleashed when we turned away from God. When Adam and Eve rebelled against God, the fabric of the world just kind of became unraveled. And in the same way, those same dark forces that were unleashed can begin to unravel our soul, can do the same thing. And you know, I think it's important that we have some idea or viewpoint to be able to hold on to when pain and suffering come into our life. And probably the best book in the Bible to help anchor our soul when we get into stormy situations would be the book of Job, wouldn't it? I mean, it shows us, first of all, that God isn't the one that brings evil into our life. It shows that Satan is the one that desires to bring it into Job's life. In fact, he can't even bring the evil into Job's life until he first asks God for permission. James says that God can't be tempted with evil, neither does he bring that evil. Is anybody tempted? God can't be tempted with evil, neither is anyone does he tempt any man. But every man is drawn away of his own lusts. And so Job is not tempted by God with evil, but by Satan. But yet Satan can't do anything until he gets God's permission, which is kind of weird, but at the same time, it shows us something really important. God's in absolute control. Nothing happens that isn't, as the saying goes, father-filtered. He's dealing with every single situation. Job concluded at the end of the ordeal, after everything was done, in the last chapter of Job, I love this line. He says this, he goes, "You know what? Lord, I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted." No purpose of God can be thwarted, no matter how crazy it gets. Why? Because he's in absolute control. Your soul needs to understand that. And just like we talked about, sometimes you have to talk to your soul. Just like the psalmist talks to it. Soul, why are you getting crazy? Put your hope in God. It's important to tell your soul, you know what? Sometimes you just have to remind yourself, God's in absolute control. He's in absolute control. We don't have Satan and God as two opposite and equal opposing forces. You have to remember that, because sometimes we think that, right? They're two opposite and opposing forces that are fighting each other. God's in absolute control. He actually is using Satan to accomplish his purposes. Is that wild? I mean, it's sometimes hard to understand because God's in control. And so, you know, why would he allow Satan to carry out certain evil things? And that's a mammoth question that I'm not going to be totally able to answer. But here's one thing that really has helped me, and I want to just give you this morning for your soul to hang on to, and it's this. God permits evil and suffering to come into a situation or a person's life only to the degree that it defeats the actual intention that Satan had for it. You got that? He allows evil and suffering to come into a situation or a person's life only to the degree that it actually defeats Satan's actual intention. In fact, usually, if you read the Bible, most of the time, when God allows evil or suffering to come into someone's life, and Satan loves that, he's like, okay, here's my chance. What he does is he takes Satan's actual intention and he allows the very opposite of what Satan wanted to happen to take place. I love this line. It just kind of came to me. I've heard it before, but it's been coming to me this week as I've been in prayer. God only gives Satan enough rope to hang himself.
Tell your soul that when you're in the middle of something and you're feeling wiped out and you can't figure it out. He only allows enough evil to come into your life so that God can actually utilize it to have the exact opposite of what Satan was hoping was going to happen. You know what? Satan sets up devices to destroy your soul, but God will use them to develop your soul. In the book of Job, Satan is bringing evil and suffering into Job's life, right? And as a result, he's trying to get what? What does Satan want out of this? What is his intention that God's going to turn on its head? He wants to prove that Job is a fraud. The only reason this guy likes you is because the stuff he's getting from you. That's the only reason. His soul isn't centered on you, God. It's centered on the stuff you're giving him. You know, as a matter of fact, in the beginning of the book, that's what it outright says, that Satan says to God. He goes, listen, you really think Job serves you for nothing? Don't you know he wants to get something out of this? You know, like we often say, the marriage when one of the two people is a lot richer than the other one, and you kind of wonder why they're really marrying that person. Do they really love them? And Satan's accusing Job of the same thing with God. Does he really love you for that? He likes you. He loves you the same way kids love the ice cream man. That's what it is. He doesn't love you. His soul's not centered on you. He loves the things he's getting from you. He loves the money. He loves the prosperity. He loves the status. He loves his health that you've given him. He doesn't love any thing from you. He loves all these other things. You take these things away from him, man, and you just see what happens. I mean, Satan's got a point, doesn't he? I mean, let's face it. Haven't you ever had people come into your life and they wanted certain things from you, and when you didn't give them to them, all of a sudden they're not around anymore? I can remember, you know, as another advantage of being in ministry for a while, you do have some stories. I can remember going back, this is quite a while ago, about 15 years ago or so, and there was a lady that came to the church, as often sometimes you get. She was actually the mother of somebody that attended our church, and so I felt bad for her because I knew her daughter, and her daughter said, my mom's been having a lot of problems, and so we helped her out with some finances, and she actually was sleeping in her van at the time, and she parked it in the church parking lot. But then I came to find out that she had serious drug problems. And so I said to her, you know what? The only money I can give you next would be for an entrance fee to go into Teen Challenge and get yourself cleaned up. Van disappeared, never saw her again, sadly. But that's the way it works sometimes. Satan is saying Job is no different. God, you don't give him all this other stuff, you see what happens. And in the first chapter, that chapter is brutal to read through, isn't it? Everything's stripped from Job, everything's taken away. And by the 20th verse, it's all gone. He's got nothing left, not even his family. And it says this, then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshiped. He said, naked I came from my mom's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Through all this, the narration says of the book of Job, that Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. Again, God permitted evil and suffering to come into Job's life only to the degree that it defeats the actual intention that Satan had. He gave Satan just enough rope, and he ended up hanging himself. And in this case, it actually is the total opposite of what Satan wanted to accomplish. He wanted to expose, he was looking to expose Job's allegiance
and love for God is a fraud. Instead, Job proved that a human being really can cling on to God in love and hope and faith and allegiance, even if he doesn't see it paying off. It's exactly what Job showed. Not only that, but the rest of time in history, his life and story has been used to inspire millions of people. And Job is one of the most great and famous figures in history, isn't he? And here Satan brought in all of this stuff. He's looking to discourage and defeat Satan, that he's just going to throw in the towel and just give up on his faith and give up on God and just kind of fall back into the pages of history, obscure, nobody ever hear about him. And that's what Satan wants. Instead, Job clings to God, and he becomes one of the greatest figures and becomes one of the greatest works of literature. The exact opposite of what Satan was looking at. His model and example of bravery and courage has been used to change people's lives now for thousands and thousands of years. Only because Satan was allowed by God. Think of this now. Why did it happen? Because Satan was allowed by God to touch his life, which in turn became the very noose by which he was hung. Well, I'm going to show you how his love is a fraud. And the very exact opposite happened. And Job is used to this day as an incredible example to inspire many to keep God as the center of your soul. He's who you love. Everything else in this life is pretty fragile, gang, to keep your soul centered on. And the weight of your soul is way too heavy to hang it on anything else. But God can handle it. God will bring it through. God will bring you through. But here's the thing. You may go through a lot of these things. You may go through a lot of pain and suffering. But here's the deal. You may actually never know the actual reasons as to why you went through certain suffering. Not in this life. Did you realize that Job never knew why he went through everything? He didn't. God never explained it to him. God never came to him and said, you know, listen, I allowed the right perfect amount of limited evil into your life to defeat the actual intention of Satan so that I could make your life into a story that would be an inspiration for souls for the rest of time in history. He never said that to Job. He never told him. He had no idea why he was suffering. All God ever says in the end of the book to Job is basically, I'm God and I know what I'm doing. That's what God is saying to you. That's what he's saying to me right now. Man, you might have a lot of unexplained stuff that's going on. And he's just saying, listen, I ask you to love me, right? Love me with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. He didn't say you are to understand me. He said you are to love me. And he says, I'm God, and I know what I'm doing. What the Bible calls us to do is to serve God, even though you may never know why you go through certain things, just like Job. But he'll use it all. And I just wrote this as kind of a final line before we go to communion this morning. Therefore, you're going to have to hold on to God. Sometimes through a lot of confusion, sometimes through a lot of things that are just a mystery. And you're going to have to go through it and not try and get an answer. But what you are going to have to do is stay in relationship with God, a God that you can't control, but guess what? You can totally trust. Not really what we want, but it's what He gives us because it's what we need. You're going to have to just hang on to your relationship with God, this God that you can't control, but you can totally trust. And let's face it, is there any greater example than Satan, given by God just enough rope to hang himself, than the cross? All his intentions, he sends out all this evil, all this suffering. He's looking to kill the Son of Man himself, the Son of God himself, and he does. But in killing him, he makes eternal life possible for every soul and human being. Totally turns it on its head. The cross is our sign of salvation, but I also believe it's the sign to every one of us of how God works. Through the most unconventional means sometimes, that is way beyond our understanding. Because he knows what he's doing. We don't, but he does. Looked like the whole thing was falling apart. It was his body, and it was broken. The ministry was ruined and over, but no, it's his body, and it's actually broken for you and for me. For the forgiveness of our sins. That wouldn't have to be me, it wouldn't have to be you, but it's him. His blood, not yours, not mine, but his. Taking on the punishment that I deserve, that you deserve. His blood shed for you. I'm going to ask the ushers, they come on up, and like we usually do, let's wait till we're all served, and then we'll take it together. As a reminder, what God's done for us, and how unconventionally He works His plan out for each and every one of us. prayer today. It's what Jesus, or Jesus' words. Just seek Him first. He's got to be the center. So easy to make the peripheral the main thing.
Amen. Thanks for coming.